Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
These are interesting times. As you have heard in the first half hour of the show, Willie Taggart has been named in a lawsuit, along with the University of Oregon, the NCAA, and Taggart's strength and conditioning coach, who was with him at Oregon and is now with him at Florida State. Doug Brenner, an offensive lineman at Oregon, who before his senior season was hospitalized along with two other Ducks players after a workout that Taggart's strength and conditioning coach put them through, is suing for $11.5 million. Taggart had a rough go from the time he started in Tallahassee and now compounded by this lawsuit, which I don't think anybody thinks this is going to go to trial. Bobby, this ends up settled, doesn't it? Like, isn't this like got settlement written all over it? Very public.
Yeah, there's no way they're putting this out in public. I mean, it's public now, but there's no way going to trial and putting more of this stuff out there.
I would like to see the depositions at least, and then they can settle.
You won't.
Matt Baker works for the Tampa Bay Times, covers Florida State. He's joining us to give us some context on just Taggart's time in Tallahassee. Matt, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. We kind of just want to check in. I mean, there's an odd fascination in this part of the country with Willie, given on how he left here. How did that first year go for him?
Well, you look at the record and everything else, it didn't go very well, John. Not very well at all. I mean, Florida State, one of the, as bad as things were in 2017, with the way Jimbo was leaving and kind of hanging everything into balance for a while, and they had to reschedule Louisiana Monroe to make a bowl game. But they still had a couple points of pride, which is they hadn't had a losing season since Bobby Bowden's first year in 1976. They had the longest bowl streak in the history of college football, excluding the NCAA stuff that was taken away. But both of those things came to an end. FSU's offensive line was probably the worst I've ever seen at the major college football level, certainly at the Power 5 level. The offense looked out of sorts. Quarterback play didn't work. One of the most talented offensive backfields in the country didn't do anything. And I could keep going and going, but I'd be on here for a long time. So it did not go well. It did not go well at all.
Didn't go well. Why do you think that? Was it a lack of talent? Was it sloppiness, coaching? What did you see?
It was everything. When you've got a program like Florida State, they should never go 5-7. You're going to have ups and downs, but they shouldn't be at 5-7. And when the first thing you mentioned was talent, they had a good amount of talent. I mean, Jimbo had, I believe, was four top six recruiting classes that he left FSU with. The biggest problem was the offensive line. Some of that's Willie's fault because I think anybody who followed the program knew the line hadn't been good for a couple of years and they were going to have some issues. So you got to get the JUCO guys in there. You got to find ways to plug the holes immediately, and that didn't happen. Some of it's obviously recruiting under Jimbo. He signed some good offensive linemen, but the ones he signed either got hurt or got kicked out or there were some issues. And the under-the-radar projects didn't pan out, and there were injuries too. So that was just kind of one bad thing after another. But when I looked at the season, I guess kind of my lasting memory of this FSU season, it was fourth quarter in Tallahassee, Florida State hosting the Gators. So, again, last quarter of the season, they played 47 quarters. There was one play. FSU still couldn't get lined up correctly. They didn't have enough guys on the field. 47 quarters into the season. And if you can't do the basics like that right at the very end of the year, that tells you there's a lot of coaching issues. And of course, they eventually got the guy on the field through an incomplete pass, and that was that.
Yeah, I mean, he was the most penalized team in the Pac-12 his one season at Oregon. It wasn't efficient by any means. Play calling became an issue at Oregon, too. When he didn't have Justin Herbert, they couldn't move the ball. He has now turned over play calling duties to a new coordinator. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, one of the big shakeups that's already happened, Walt Bell was the offensive coordinator. He did some of the play calling at various points during the year. He took the head coaching job at UMass, which led the offensive coordinator job to become open. And they hired Kendall Briles. Your listeners, our readers, yep, know that name because he was at Baylor, Art Briles' son. And depending on what you believe and who you hear, at least probably knew about some of the stuff that was going on or might have been somehow involved in some of the rape culture, I guess you'd say, that was going on at Baylor. But on the field, it is a very good schematic match. I mean, a lot of the Gulf Coast offense that Willie started down here at USF and used to some degree at Oregon and is used now at FSU. So it's from the Baylor tree. It's the receivers spread out really wide, up-tempo, that sort of thing. So on the field, it's a schematic match, no question. But it's the off-the-field stuff that gives me and plenty of other people pause.
We're talking to Matt Baker of the Tampa Bay Times, covered Florida State, and Willie Taggart. The news breaks out here. I don't expect you to be up to speed, but Willie Taggart is being sued along with the University of Oregon, the NCAA, along with his strength and conditioning coach who's at Florida State. How's that going to fly? And what do you make of that when you hear that at face value?
Well, it's certainly interesting. You knew Willie had some, at least a little bit of baggage from, you know, from his time at Oregon. And that was obviously the thing that was still kind of out there. I was surprised when I saw the Oregonian report. I don't have anything to add. You know, I've reached out to FSU and they haven't commented yet, at least by the time we got on the phone. But it's obviously it's not a good thing. It's not a good situation to be in. What happened up there was not a good thing. So I mean, I guess we'll just kind of see where it goes. I heard you guys before I came on expecting it to get settled. I haven't covered a lawsuit quite like that, but I've covered enough lawsuits involving important big wigs at universities to assume that it would get settled before any depositions take place. I'm with you guys on that one.
Do you think that it's odd, the fascination that people in the Northwest have with Taggart, or do you see it as understandable? I'm always curious from outside in what that looks like.
Oh, it's completely understandable. I mean, Oregon is not a stepping stone job. They're not. I mean, the Ducks have, you know, top-tier resources with what Phil Knight's done for the program. They're in a Power 5 league. They've got a very good reputation. They shouldn't be a stepping stone job, and I understand why people at Oregon would view that that's the way that Willie took it. But again, Willie grew up down here. He grew up an FSU fan. That was the absolute dream job. And he's, you know, his reputation, I understand, kind of jumping from job to job. To some degree, that's the business. But I really do think, you know, I believe Willie when he said that was a dream job and he wouldn't have left Oregon for any others. And frankly, I think there's a little bit of, down here we've got some similar stuff. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think that Gator fans are paying a ton of attention to Will Muschamp at South Carolina, but I know our readers, you know, people down here are interested in how Jimbo's doing at Texas A&M because of the way he jilted them. So I see where you guys are coming from. I'm with you there.
Matt Baker, Tampa Bay Times, is with us. How important is it for Willie to win this next season? If he goes 5-7 again, how much time does Willie get at Florida State?
Yeah, I mean, he has to win very quickly. The Kendall Briles move to me, I don't want to call it desperation. That's a little too extreme. But it's there were other good offensive coordinators I think FSU could have gotten that wouldn't have had the baggage and the name of Kendall Briles. But to me, that was a sign that, hey, we got to win now or there's not. We don't know how long tomorrow's going to last. Now, I don't necessarily think he'd be hot seat heading into this season. But at 5-7, there'd be no question year three. There'd just be a tremendous amount of pressure, especially when you consider what's going on elsewhere. I mean, the ACC, aside from Clemson, has taken a step back here in the last, you know, they were great the year Clemson won the first title. They've taken a step back. Miami, you know, FSU's arch rival, just had a, you know, very disappointing season. They've got a first-time head coach. So you look at kind of the landscape everywhere else, this is a year where FSU, in theory, could be pretty good, given the schedule and everything. So if FSU turns in another 5-7 clunker, the pressure will be really on to see if Taggart can get through year three.
I wondered if it was a good move for him, because I know it's a dream job and all that, and I think it's hard to turn that money away when you have it, and, you know, you have other factors like, you know, family there. But I just wondered if, you know, he could afford at Oregon to kind of tread water for a couple years, and I think people would have understood before it turned. But I think, and I think it was easier to win in the Pac-12, certainly, than it is to win at Florida State. I just wondered if he was headed towards, if he doesn't win in 2 and 3 years, he's done. Like, he's out, and he's got to start over as a coordinator somewhere.
Yeah, but you give me my dream job, I'm taking it. You don't know when that job's going to come around. I mean, I think he's had two coaches, or, you know, Willie makes three coaches in the last 40 years. You don't know when it's going to come around. And you're speaking at it objectively as an outsider, which, of course, we are. But I don't know how many coaches I've ever talked to say, you know what, I don't know if I'm ready for that. I don't know if I can win there.
Right.
That's not something that's really in their DNA. They think they can take their guys and beat just about anybody around because that's what they've done. To me, the question was going to be whether Willie understands, recognizes, and addresses his shortcomings. You kind of touched on it. The play calling, you know, even when he was here at USF, that was a major question mark with him. I think the program building, the recruiting, that type of thing Willie could do. It was, how's he going to do on third and long? Or, you know, how's he going to do after halftime with the adjustment? That type of stuff.
Yeah.
So to me, again, that Kendall Briles move is a sign of maybe Willie recognizes his shortcomings a little bit, knows that that's the area he has to improve on, and hired a, you know, again, on the field, a guy who should be a great match for that to fix it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think outside, I know from this part of the country, people were outspoken saying that was a desperation move, should never taken Briles on the staff. Did the Florida State fans do what Ohio State fans do when that stuff happens and say, this is our guy, we're behind him, or was there some uneasiness with Briles coming aboard?
There was definitely some uneasiness. I think most fans are, hey, if this is what helps us win, then I don't care. But there was definitely some uneasiness. I mean, again, you have to remember, too, the context of everything else. Because Florida State's had their own Title IX issues here the last few years. They're still under federal investigation for how they handled the Jameis Winston accusation. They settled a lawsuit a couple years ago from that for almost $1 million. One of the reasons their offensive line stuck, because a guy who was probably going to be their starting tackle got kicked out of school or kicked off the team for violating Title IX and a dating violence accusation. So FSU's had and remember, too, FSU was founded as a women's university. So you take all those things into consideration, FSU's past and recent and long-term past, and you bring in that guy. It didn't sit well with somebody. I think the majority of the fan base is down with it, but I also know that there are some important people at FSU and just the fan base in general that had some serious and still have some serious reservations about it.
I appreciate you, Matt. I thank you for making time for us. Wish you the best, and can't wait to see what Florida State's response is. I know our listeners will be following you closely on that.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
All right, there's Matt Baker, Tampa Bay. I lived in Tallahassee. I lived in Tallahassee when Bobby Bowden was coach. And Bobby Bowden could do no wrong. Bobby Bowden had Lavernius Coles and Warwick Dunn running around Dillard's shopping center with fake credit cards. And Florida State fans are like, what are you going to do? These poor kids, they don't get any stipends. You know, it was like, that's a criminal act. No, never mind. They're great football players. Jameis Winston, crab legs, sex assault allegation, all that. Fans give coaches in their programs a super wide berth, and in a lot of cases, not within reason. I think if Taggart had gone like 8-4 and brought, you know, Art Briles' son aboard, they would have been very defensive of it. But I love that there's so many uneasiness with it. I want your reaction to this. We'll put Willie Taggart in this lawsuit to rest, but your phone calls, 503-417-7575. Derek Anderson, former Oregon State quarterback, still in the NFL, will be joining us lately to talk about the NFL playoffs. Plus, we'll go to Chuck Swirsky, the Chicago Bulls play-by-play broadcaster, to talk about the Blazers-Bulls matchup. Leave it right here. Founder of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, is getting divorced.
Yep.
$130 billion net worth. I'm not as struck by the fact that they're divorcing, and it looks like they'll probably split it. It'll be the largest divorce settlement in history. It'll eclipse the Paul McCartney, $48 million. But I'm surprised that he announced on Twitter. You know, it's like, it feels like that's something that shouldn't, like, that shouldn't go on Twitter.
Do you think they're just trying to get ahead of the game?
Yeah, and they announced it together.
Yeah.
Because she apparently, like, she was, they were both hedge fund people, and they left to go found Amazon, and they wrote up the business proposal as they drove across the country. She was driving the car, and he was writing it down on a notepad. So, like, it wasn't like, a lot of people have the perception that it was just him. She, her brain was involved in the founding of Amazon.
Yeah.
So I would expect she's going to walk with like $60 to $65 million.
Billion.
Billion dollars. Excuse
there you
me.
Go. There's a huge difference.
Billion.
You know,
yeah, if she gets $65 million, it's not good for her. Let's go out to the phone lines. John is on I-205, wants to talk about the Willie Taggart lawsuit. That's what it's going to be known as. John, what's up, man?
Hey, John, you played earlier Willie's sound bites and cuts about how he kept blaming the media for falsely reporting. What was that all about? What was he? I didn't hear you ask him the questions, trying to get into his head what he was talking about.
Yeah, so at the root of it was right after Willie Taggart got to Oregon, he did the introductory news conference, and then they started holding their off-season workouts. And no question, the 2016 Mark Helfrich coach team was soft. There was a softness about that team, and I think what Willie wanted to do was set a tone. So he comes in, and his strength and conditioning coach, who was not certified, Irle Orinde, was not a certified coach. He came in and conducted a workout, and Willie apparently made a speech to the players about trying to find the snakes and cut their heads off, and then they go to work out. They're not given water in that first workout. Three players go to the hospital, and Willie was upset that his version, air quotes, of the story wasn't what the Oregonian reported. See, Willie wanted it to be like a non-story because Willie was out recruiting. Willie had a signing day in February coming up. He was trying to recruit players, and he was getting questions about this strength and conditioning issue. Do you care about players? Do you take care of them? You say they're like sons. Would you treat your sons that way? Stuff like that. So Willie was on the defensive. He was very upset at Andrew Greif of the Oregonian for even reporting it. And in fact, he told Greif that he would never talk to him again. And so my beef with Willie was, you showed up and said, make no excuses, blame no one, do something. You haven't even coached a game yet. You got a coach who has a DUI. You got another coach who lands three players in the hospital. And it gets reported and you're mad at the reporter? Be mad at your strength and conditioning coach. Have more oversight. Troy is in Hubbard. Troy, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon.
I just heard the breaking from one of you guys that Jalen Hurts is going to leave Alabama.
Jalen Hurts, he's entered his name into the transfer portal, which means he's eligible to go somewhere else. But I originally thought if Justin Herbert had declared for the draft that he could be headed to Oregon, but I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to transfer to Oregon to sit or share time with Justin Herbert. That's my hesitation there.
Did Cristobal recruit him?
I know that he knows him well.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't mind having him as a backup. I think he's better than Burmeister.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having him as a backup. But why would you leave Alabama as a backup to go to Oregon as a backup?
I'm not sure.
I love that you call, Troy. I love you, but he ain't doing it to please you. There's no way Jalen Hurts is going to Oregon if Herbert is the starter.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.